The Doug and Wolf Show.
The next 4 hours of your life will be outstanding wherever you are if you keep listening to The Doug and Wolf Show.
You're calling your shot.
I'm calling my shot on today's show.
Doug Franz, Ron Wolfley.
You know that's good radio.
Oh, yeah.
Doug and Wolf, 98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station.
Oh, yeah. There it is right there, ladies and gentlemen. Yes, indeed. Index finger into the air. Hour number one of the Doug and Wolf Show. Savages in the morning on a Cowbell Friday. Bang that thing. Oh, we all need more cowbell in our lives, do we not? Bang it, Douglas. Slide on them Jordache jeans, boy. Kick on the lizard skin boots and take out that neon comb and brush back that fine feathered hair. The party's never going to be the same without you, Craig Wolfley. Look in the mirror and brush it back. You're the big man on campus, hour number one of the Doug and Wolf Show. Savages in the morning on a Cowbell Friday. Douglas, good morning, brother.
Good morning.
Command and control, are you ready to broadcast? Of course, there's the thumb right there, ladies and gentlemen. Hour number one. Studio wife on the west side, are you ready to broadcast on a Cowbell Friday?
I have an index finger in the air.
Bang the thing, Douglas. Go ahead, give me some more cowbell. And yes, it's a football Friday as well. I am jacked up, Basin Onions. Good morning to you. Good morning to the world. Good morning, football. Let's brawl.
You know, this is a day to unbelievably celebrate because I am thoroughly convinced the apocalypse will hit within the next 72 hours.
Why is that?
Do you realize the epicenter of the sports world of planet Earth is Tampa Bay?
Yeah, Tampa Bay.
The Rays are the one seed in the American League. The Lightning are up 2-1 in the Stanley Cup, and the Bucks are in first place.
Yes.
How stupid is this?
Okay. I mean,
there's Tampa Bay. How is Tampa Bay doing this well in sports right now?
That's so – what do you mean? That really has gotten under your skin a little
bit.
Yeah,
they don't deserve anything. Everything Tampa Bay already gets, they should not be this good. And they don't have the fourth sport. They got three sports, and their fans stink. They don't really care about any of their teams, and they've got three of the best teams in the game.
Oh, my goodness. Honestly, the thing that's bothering me this morning is 6 weeks. 6 weeks to get a kid ready to play in a football game?
Doesn't Tampa Bay host the Super Bowl this year, too?
Oh, my goodness.
Yes, they do. Yes, they do.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Yeah. Boy, look at that bear. Talk about piling on right there. That's big time by Bear. Yes, indeed. They do host the Super Bowl.
The coronavirus world, obviously, the Stanley Cup is in Edmonton and not in Tampa Bay.
Yes.
But the Rays are going to be hosting a three-game series starting next week, as they're going to be the one or the two seed. And then you've got the Buccaneers. They've got a huge game against Dallas. Tampa Bay takes on, gosh, who do they play? Denver. They're on the road at Denver, and they should smash them because of the injuries that that the Broncos have suffered.
Mm.
So they'll be in first place at 2-1 next week. It's just, I look up and down the world. Look at us. The Reds and Giants are fighting it out for a playoff spot, and the Diamondbacks aren't involved.
Yes.
What happened?
The brutality of it all. What happened? That is a great question right there.
I'm sorry, Kyler Murray, but you've got to lift us all up. Yeah, the whole city's on your shoulders.
Yeah.
Let's go.
I mean, it was a sprint for the most part, right? The Diamondbacks, and unfortunately, they stumbled out of the blocks, metaphorically speaking, regained their balance, and somehow they were 13-11. Do you remember they were 13-11, Douglas?
Yeah, I do.
And then suddenly they lost, what, 18 of 20 games?
That's still impossible. If you didn't hear it on Wednesday, we were joined by Mike Hayes, the general manager, and he said, I feel like the core of this team is still correct. And I Listen, I trust that man. He's excellent at his job, and I feel so uncomfortable disagreeing with people that are smarter than I am and better at their job than I am at my job. And yet that's exactly how I feel of when you say we've got the core, we can keep this together. No core with talent and leadership goes 18-20 or 2-18 in a Major League Baseball season. Nobody. It's impossible to say we've got good leadership, we've got good talent. You might have one or the other. I don't see how you might even have neither, but I don't see how you have both and you go 2-18.
It's hard for me to disagree with that.
So Kyler, it's all on you. Kyler, it's all on you. This 3-week stretch, we have such a long history in this city of believing in something and having it smack us in the face. Three crappy teams are your opponents, and we believe you're a good team. Crap does happen sometimes, so 4-1 we can get over, all right? But 3-2, no way. No way. You got, and I think 5-0 is not setting the bar too high at all. Let's go.
More on this as the show unfolds.
Wow.
There you go, Bear.
And now, it's time for your Arizona Sports Starting Five.
Hi, Vince.
You can't go to work without knowing these five huge stories.
Brush it back,
Here's
Vince.
Doug Franz and Rod.
And punch it right here.
Wolfley.
Hi, Vince.
Number five.
Number five this morning, the Dolphins a 31-13 winner, but that's not what you need to know. Ryan Fitzpatrick, East Side Zone, 18 of 20 for 160 yards, two touchdowns, and a touchdown rushing, and that's not what you need to know. What you need to know is the weirdest stat in football, that Ryan Fitzpatrick became the first human being on planet Earth to beat the same team six times with six different teams. He's beaten the Miami Dolphins six times. Excuse me. He's beaten the Jacksonville Jaguars six times in his career with six different teams.
You think he's got some confidence when he plays with the Jags?
I do. I do a little bit.
Yeah, y'all.
Number four.
Number four this morning is your NBA playoffs. Lakers a winner, 114 over Denver's 108. That brings the Lakers to a 3-1 record. Back-to-back games. Or no, I shouldn't say back-to-back because they stunk in game three. But games 2 and 4. Davis was fantastic. He goes for 34 points in this game on 10 of 15 shooting, 5 boards, 3 assists, and the Lakers are one win away from moving into the bubble as the Western Conference champion.
In a gross simplification of the truth, basically, it means the Lakers won the game on the glass.
That's not that much of a simplification.
Number three!
There's a lot of truth to that. Three is the Diamondbacks-Rockies. It's a doubleheader. Early game is at 3:40. That's on ESPN 6:20 a.m. Normal time for game two, that's at 6:40, and that'll be here on 98.7 FM Arizona Sports Station. But I would kind of point your eyes a little bit more to the 3:40 game. Two pitchers that weren't even remotely supposed to be the aces of their staff, and guess what they became in this crappy year for both teams?
The aces.
The aces of their staff, Gallen versus Sensatella, should be a good game.
Zach Gallen, his final outing of the season. Ooh.
I expect a lot from the young man.
Number three.
Hopefully he does well. Number three is what we just did. Keep up.
Number two.
Number two this morning is Larry Fitzgerald talking about Kyler Murray, what impresses him, what he likes about him, and some of the strong statements that he had to say. And it's kind of interesting when you drop most dynamic.
He's really, really talented in terms of running the football. And, you know, what makes him so tough is, you know, he's so abrupt, you know, when he's running the ball. And so when he's running up on defenders, you have to be cautious because he can slide on you. I mean, he has a hesitation move, and he can slide off the hesitation move. You know, he played baseball with the first round pick, so he knows how to slide and get himself down. Or he can put his foot in his grass and separate, you know, at the blink of an eye.
That is so insightful.
It is.
Larry.
It's, I mean, like, we all see it with our eyes, but he put it into the exact words. It kind of made you feel like that's what it's like to be a defender and trying to tackle him.
Number one.
Not fair.
Not fair is right. And the number one thing you need to know about this morning, the Pac-12 will play. They will play 6 regular season games. Then they'll have a championship game. But while the championship game is on, they'll line up another game for everybody to end up at 7. Huh? That's next on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
Yeah.
So after all this time, now we've got Big Pac football.
Yeah, I think if you're a Pac-12 fan, you're excited about the news that broke a little earlier this afternoon. And haven't really seen the players. We were done working out, so I'll see them tomorrow. I'm pretty sure they're excited for it.
That's Herm Edwards, head coach of Arizona State, on the Maroon Monsoon last night. It's Doug and Wolf here on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station, with Wolf, Baron, Maloney, all live in the Auction Community Studios. And I am on the west side in Studio Wife, and I just got a text from Paul Calvisi that said, can I have some cowbells? So there you go,
Paul.
Oh,
there you go, Paulie.
I know you were wanting that.
You know, cowbell's right up there. It makes me want to go truck the trombone player from Stanford. That's
well,
what I
good
think
news.
Of.
You're going to get to play them. You're going to get to play. The way the schedule's going to work, and this is so weird, you play all five of your division games. And then if you remember when the divisions were split, Cal, Stanford, USC, and UCLA threw an enormous fit, saying you can't divide us up unless you guarantee we play each other. And they said, fine, we'll play your little game. So this, again, is the same thing where they will have a non-divisional game. That means everybody else gets one. Now, there's no word that I have heard of whether ASU will play the Washington schools or the Oregon schools, or they'll be split up. And same thing with Colorado and Utah. And then here's where it gets even weirder. Whoever goes to the championship game from the north plays the team from the south. The other five teams in each division will then be lined up to play each other because you're still going to get your seventh game. It's just there's a championship game going on that weekend and you're not in it.
And that's the exact same format the Big Ten is using.
Yes.
Once again. So there's Larry Scott yesterday. Geez, we're following the science and we're following the data and we're following the medical advice from our medical experts on campus and the university medical schools. And no, you're following the Big Ten right down to the same scheduling format
that has
the conference championship game and then 2 versus 2, 3 versus 3, et cetera.
Honestly, I'm just happy we're playing football, guys. I'm so glad we're actually going to play a season in the fall. I mean, I have to get over the amount of time it's going to take to prepare a young guy to play in a football game and accept the fact that it's going to take 6 weeks and get over it and just be happy that we're actually going to have some ball.
Herm Edwards, what kind of time do you have to prepare?
Yeah, we all felt that way, and I think we looked at it through our medical staffs, through our strength and conditioning coaches. I think most of the coaches in the Pac-12 relied on those two entities to give us the information. And that's how it kind of all came together. And now we have a plan. You know, there's a start date. And I think every coach in the Pac-12 is excited about that.
I do have to ask the question. In my mid-40s right now, I'm pretty confident there's some things I could do if you gave me 6 weeks to get ready for. Wait.
Be a football game. That much I'll promise you.
A 20-year-old needs 6 weeks? Well, like, what are they doing? What are they doing right now that they need 6 weeks to get ready for athletic competition?
Okay, and here's the answer to that. And I'm with you to a degree. And so when I was looking through it, I think it's in the interest of competitive balance because the Oregon schools and the California schools haven't even allowed to be in attendance mm-hmm. for a lot of these training sessions. And so you don't want this huge competitive imbalance or this disparity between perhaps the schools in Colorado and Utah and Arizona where kids maybe have been on campus and they've been in the weight rooms and they've been conditioning and training, whereas in California and Oregon, not at all.
That's a good point,
Paul. Those
kids
might really be out of shape. And, you know, it's not like the University of California, Berkeley needs another disadvantage trying to win a stinking football game. Let's level the playing field.
There's logic there, but there's a problem, Paul. You're talking about six teams and only Oregon and USC count. I mean, it's not
it.
When you say that the other kids aren't really ready. Is Oregon State, UCLA, Stanford, or Cal really going to have an effect on the standings?
But you know what, guys? I go back, honestly.
Stop kissing up to Maloney.
I go back to Larry Scott and the Pac-12 and the decision to actually call the season off immediately, right?
Mm-hmm.
The Big Ten and the Pac-12 saying, that's it. We're not going to play any football. We might try to play in 2021 this spring, but we're not going to play any football whatsoever. And the reason why, instead of saying, hey, listen, We're just going to postpone it. We're going to postpone it. We're just going to see. We're going to follow the science. We're going to wait and see what happens here. Because then you would have had, you would have had guys that actually were involved in programs from Oregon and California, where they would have said, hey, listen, you know what? I'm going to stay in shape. I'm going to keep my body in shape because there's a chance we're going to play at some point in time. The Pac-12 just said, we're not. We're, that's it. It's all over with. And because of that, Paul's point is valid in regard to the six weeks in getting somebody ready to play.
Didn't Herm tell you last time he was on, last week or so, that kids haven't even worn helmets for X number of months? Well, yeah, you know, you got to get your neck ready.
Right, but, Paul, here's the whole thing. Once again, how many times I came back in 1981 to 1984 at West by God, Virginia, we had 21 days before our opener. We had 19 days before our opener. You were gone all summer long. This is common practice. And this is back when football was absolutely brutal, ladies and gentlemen. Okay? So to me, you had 21 days to get ready for your first game. 19 days to get ready for your first game.
But, Wolf,
You hadn't had a helmet on, Paul. You didn't have a helmet on.
Is there any chance medicine and science have improved in that time?
Oh, my goodness.
Doug, you're on to something, just in a different way. Back then, Wolf had the advantage of Duranabol and other steroids is what he had.
No, Paul.
That's what nobody he had was, going on in the early 80s.
And it's D-ball, Paul, by the way.
I see.
Whatever.
Decadorabolin.
Here's Martin Schill from the press conference with a very simple question. Hey, guys, why didn't you just vote last week?
So funny how you know that.
I thought maybe we would vote last week, and we decided not to.
Oh.
And the reason we decided not to
was
we wanted to go back and talk with our students. We wanted to go back and talk with our faculty and staff, as well as our boards. And I did that. I met with about five or six
different
groups.
Couldn't you have done that
and I'll tell
for the
you,
last
the
month?
Group that is most in my mind is the two groups of student athletes that I met with. And they were so desirous of going back.
This is such a joke.
Who is that again?
This is Martin Schill is his name. And the hypocrisy of this is driving me crazy.
His name isn't Schill.
Yes, it is.
Stop it.
You've got soccer and cross country and volleyball. They're still delayed until the spring. So it's not safe or it's too much trouble to get them going. But we can get football going, and we all know why, because of the money and you look like you're behind. Secondly, think about the University of Houston. If you're so right, Pac-12, Houston's your proof. Five canceled or postponed games so far. One a long time ago because the Pac-12 canceled it, Washington State, and four in a row that were already set. So with that kind of news, you could have said, you know what, there's still teams going out. And the other thing is the SEC is treating it just like the NFL. They have the money. They're having daily testing. That's why it's working for the SEC. They've got daily testing going on before they take the field. The Pac-12 is now just getting there. I look at this and laugh because as soon as they were embarrassed into that ring or they got bullied into that courtroom, now they're finally, well, we can't be left out, and now they want to play. Don't lie and say you're doing it. The health and safety of the players is paramount. No, it's not. No, it's not. Then why isn't soccer playing? Why isn't volleyball playing? You're doing this because you're getting left out and you look like clowns. That's why.
Funny how they just managed to come up with a seven-game season, and that last game, the championship game, is right before the meeting for the college football playoff selection staff, right? So, boom, it's funny how they all of a sudden – here's the problem, though. In waiting this long, now they have no wiggle room. So whereas the SEC – has some breaks built into the schedule in case there might be positive COVID tests, and we've already seen that, and there's been outbreaks across college football and Notre Dame, for example, in the Wake Forest game, but Notre Dame can make it up on October 3rd because there's no leeway. There's no grace weekend for the Pac-12. So a seven-game season, what happens if there's a postponement? That can mean complete chaos.
Why are we playing at all with myocarditis out there? Why?
Coming up next, James Betcher, former Cardinals and Giants defensive coordinator. How hard is it to defend against Kyler Murray?
By the way, Doug, where's the Mac? The Mac isn't playing. You guys look bad, Doug.
I'll get over it. That's next on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. This is cool for Wolf and me to catch up with a friend. And, oh, by the way, for you as a listener, to get a little bit of a football education today, as James Betcher has just called in on the Coulter Automotive Group Sports Line. And for those of you that don't remember, James was a position coach with the Cardinals under Todd Bowles. And then when Todd Bowles left to go to the Jets, he got promoted to defensive coordinator and had some of the best years as a DC that the Cardinals have had defensively. And then he was the Giants defensive coordinator as well. Betch, what's up? How's life? How's the family? Everybody healthy?
Good, gentlemen. Everyone's doing great. How you guys doing?
Good.
We're doing well, Betch. No doubt about it, man. How are you going to stop Kyler Murray, Betch? I mean, honestly, right now. Because I know you want back into the National Football League, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm blessed. We moved back here to the Valley and bought a home, and this is going to be kind of a forever home for us. And we lived here for 5 years and just love this area. There's great people. It's a great community. And so we bought a place here, and as my wife and I were looking at houses, I said, here's one thing I have to have. I have to have a room that can be my office, that I can set up. I can have my dry erase board. I can have my TV, my computer set up. I can have film. And, she took care of me, and I got that, and I got this nice little it's kind of my personal war room here, and get to watch a bunch of tape, and got a great setup with a computer, and watch all the college tape and all the NFL tape.
So when you're watching, I'll just rip Wolf's question right off. When you see Kyler Murray on that screen, what X's and O's or what's James Betcher doing to stop Kyler Murray?
Yeah, he is doing such, you just look at his tape from last year to this year, and I think one of the things he's doing such a great job of is his plays are extending, as he extends plays. He's doing a great job of just keeping his eyes down the field and finding guys that are open, that are like, somewhat off schedule downs. Then those opportunities to put his foot down and stay in the pocket and deliver on throws, everyone could see his arm strength when he was coming out. And it's just, as those young quarterbacks grow with their awareness and understanding of what coverages they're actually either about to see before the snap or then post-snap, what the coverage actually becomes. I think those are some of the ways that I see that he's really grown. And, with this young man, it's you got to be able to mix in your zones and play some vision coverages where you have some guys when he does break and he tries to scramble and split the defense, that you don't have one guy trying to chase him down. You have some people that have a chance to keep him leveraged and hopefully keep him in the middle of the field. Don't let him get to the perimeter.
You know, Betch, I think of from a game planning perspective for a defensive coordinator, it makes it so hard because how do you game plan that? What's tougher to do? Is it the scramble that's hard to game plan for? Do you put a spy on a guy? Is it impacting how many blitzers you're going to bring, how much pressure you're going to bring? Or is it more about called runs, designed runs? What's harder to game plan for from a defensive coordinator's perspective?
Well, I think the top two things would be number one are the design quarterback runs.
Yes.
Because understand, when a quarterback is an actual running threat in these design quarterback runs, that quarterback is an extra gap that the defense has to account for on the field. When quarterbacks don't handle the ball, that's one less gap that we have to defend on defense. And gap meaning an accountable area on the field that you need a defender for to be able to have enough to fit all the blocks and still have someone to make the tackle. That's really the first part, is when quarterbacks are running threats like Kyler. Then the second part, as I alluded to earlier, is just the off-schedule downs. Mm-hmm. It's just downs, the plays that extend, and you might have a perfect coverage for the route concepts that are called, and you're covered down, and he extends the play, and then, Hopkins breaks away from a defender's leverage and find himself open, where earlier in the down you could have seen maybe he was covered by what was called schematically. So those are really the top two things. Wolf, I think this week you're going to see with Detroit, you're going to see, Matt Patricia loves to play a lot of man coverage. They're going to either rush three, drop someone out. They're going to be playing man. They're huge just from the New England scheme things, doubling certain receivers. So a guy like Hopkins could draw a double team, mm-hmm. three-man rush with a couple spies on the quarterback. than the five-man, maybe even six-man pressures that they like to run. So,
now stay on that, James. Where is that defense's weaknesses? Like, if you're a Cardinals fan and you notice, wow, they're not rushing a lot of guys and they're double teaming D-Hop, where are they weak then in doing that that Kyler can exploit?
Well, I think some of the design quarterback runs that you see with the Cardinals, then, you know, I think over the last, you know, year and a half, we played Arizona last year when I was in New York, and I thought, you know, did a great job as they progressed through the season. We played them like week seven. And okay. If you looked at the first 2 to 3 weeks of the year, they were very true college spread offense, all five linemen, then two spread receivers on each side, these 2x2 formations, 3x1 formations, and there was really no edges. All the edges were really short for the defense. And in this league, it's really hard to play that way because the ability level of the rushers on the edge, defenders on the edge, be able to set the run and bottle and set the edge and bottle the run up. And you saw the offense progress from there. And you see it this year, you know, the two tight end formations, tighter formations at times. They still have their spread stuff, but they're going to spread you out a little bit. And do that, but I think that's where they've really progressed on offense, and that's kind of, to me, why you see kind of the evolution of where their offense is.
Betch, what do you think about DeAndre Hopkins? when you watch him on film, what makes him such a tough cover?
Yeah, what a great get by Steve. You know,
yeah, right.
It's just Steve doing Steve things, you know, kind of doing things, and going out and just finding a way to get a guy like he did. And I guess it was, I might get this year wrong, but I think it was 2015, 2016, I believe he went out and brought Chandler Jones here, you know,
yeah.
A guy that's really made such a difference defensively here. And you have a number one corner and you have a number one rusher, and he did the same thing here on offense. You know, you have a legend in Larry that's been here, and he goes and finds another guy that's, you know, one of the top five guys at his position, arguably maybe the best or one of the top three, you know, you can have, you want to argue that. And when you have someone out there now defensively, when you're talking about some of those zones you want to play, how are you going to handle Hopkins on the perimeter, rolling a corner over him, a safety over the top, and still not leave yourself too light to fit the run game and all these quarterback runs we're talking about. So that becomes your pick and choose your poison a little bit as a defensive coordinator, is you know, a defensive scheme that you're trying to build around defending these guys.
Talking to James Betcher, defensive coordinator of the Cardinals and the Giants during his time in the NFL. I wonder, James, if I flip it over to the Cardinals' defense, is it in any way a bad thing, or is it a compliment to Steve Keim because of how well some of his free agent pickups have played? That Isaiah Simmons is playing 10 to 15 snaps a game. Is that exactly what you want in a coronavirus offseason, or is that a red flag?
No, I don't think that's a red flag at all. I think it's a great pick. I think that this young man has a ton of talent. And, you know, you saw him in the game against San Fran. He's on Kittle. You know, they trust and believe in him enough that he's playing some, you know, we call it cover three seam technique on a tight end in Kittle, and he's going to ascend. You know, rookies, you don't need rookies to help you win games, hopefully early in the season. Hopefully it's not till November where you can count on those guys to make plays to help you win games. You just need rookies early in the season. Don't screw it up. Just be where you're supposed to be, do your job, understand how you fit. Then each and every week you want them to ascend, to learn a little more, to understand a little more. And, you know, early on it's about learning their job, right? And as the season progresses, you want rookies to be able to understand why they're doing what they're doing and where it fits into the entire scheme of the defense. And you said it, with the limited offseason that these guys have had, you know, talk to obviously a lot of coaches throughout the league, that's what it is for all their young players in this league. And it's not just really first-year players, but you're going to see the same thing with second-year players who would have got a ton more off-season reps this off-season with some of that understanding, and their ascension from year one to year two would be greater. And it'll just be interesting to see as the year progresses how that happens for those second-year players as well, if they're able to make those kind of leaps.
Betts, let's get some lunch, man. Okay, let's do that, brother. Appreciate your time.
Love you, James. Thank you, JB. Talk to you later.
Yeah, you know it.
There's James Betcher, right, defensive coordinator, Cardinals and Giants, joining us on the Coulter Automotive Group Sports Line. Your family owns and operates a dealership for Cadillac, Buick, GMC, Nissan, and Infiniti. Coming up next, you heard James just talking about it. What does a true number one receiver really do for a team? It's coming up on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. You know, it's kind of interesting. I'm about ready to play something for you. And when I first heard it, I had no idea what the topic was about. And the reason why I say that is because it seems like a question you would ask Vance Joseph, and he's talking about his own offense. The defensive coordinator of the Arizona Cardinals was talking about the Detroit Lions and what is expected from their wide receiver, Kenny Golladay. But, Wolf, when you hear it, man, it sounds like he's talking about DeAndre Hopkins.
Your number one receiver allows your offense to dictate some. You know, when you have a guy that you have to account for on every single down, it makes you play very, very honest. It makes the run game better because you can't load the box and leave him one-on-one constantly. You know, so not having your top receiver makes a huge difference.
That is it right there. Ding, 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 ding. And he's talking about Detroit, of course, and Kenny Golladay, as you said, Douglas. This is what DeAndre Hopkins does for Cliff Kingsbury and Kyler Murray. He makes the defense more predictable, Basinonians. And when a defense is more predictable, they become more beatable. Do they not, James Betcher? Do they not, Betch? Mm-hmm. Listen, I know I've been talking about it all offseason, and you're probably sick of hearing it, Basinonians. But when you hear Vance Joseph say that, when you have a guy you have to account for every single down, it makes you play very, very honest. He's talking about being more predictable. Because you've got to do things that are sound as a defensive coordinator. You have to do things that are sound. And once a play caller, once a quarterback knows what you're likely to do in certain situations because you want to be sound or very, very honest, as VJ said, it's advantage offense.
Mm-hmm.
Make no mistake about it.
That's Vance Joseph. And again, it's such a great description of what D-Hop does. Now, even though he was talking about, hey, we better not sleep on Detroit because just by having Kenny Golladay to play, they're automatically a better team than whatever was else on film in the first 2 weeks.
He was a guy that led the NFL in touchdowns last year. He's got height, he's got speed, he's got size, and he can make plays on the ball. So it's going to be a lot different with him out there on Sunday to balance the calls between stopping him and also stopping their run game with Peterson and those guys. So it's an explosive offense.
Mm. Yeah, it really is. But the offense has kind of been up and down, inconsistent a little bit right now. If you go in and you look at some of the tape on the Detroit Lions, you'll see that they're average for the most part offensively. Now, is their skill set average? No, I don't think so. Mm-hmm. I think Matthew Stafford, Douglas, I think Matthew Stafford is an excellent quarterback. I don't want to call him, I don't want to call him a great quarterback or a Hall of Fame quarterback, even though people will look at his numbers and say, hey, this guy's been downright prolific in the National Football League. I think he's an excellent quarterback. That's what I want to say about him. This is one of the top 32 individuals on the face of the planet playing quarterback. There's no doubt about it. Having said that, I think he's got good talent around. I think Marvin Jones is one of those guys. I absolutely love him as a wide receiver, a guy that can contribute. Kenny Golladay, we've talked about him all week long. And, you know, T.J. Hockenson, try to keep in mind that last year, this tight end lit up the Arizona Cardinals for 131 receiving yards. 6 catches for 131 yards. They targeted him like 9 times in that game. We all know about the tight end and the problems, of course, that it's given the Arizona Cardinals in the past. I think that thing is just that, in the past from now on, because of Devondre Campbell and how well he's playing and Jordan Hicks as well. I'm bullish on this, but the Lions are loaded defensively. I mean, offensively. They're absolutely loaded. But more than anything else, when we have this conversation, you have to think of what DeAndre Hopkins brings to Kyler Murray. This mm-hmm. is what is so powerful. To hear Vance Joseph articulate it the way that he did from the other side of the ball.
Yeah,
literally
yeah.
looking at...
Talking about another team.
Exactly. Looking at the Lions saying, this is what Kenny Golladay brings, and this is why it's so difficult. This is what DeAndre Hopkins brings to the Cardinals and why I was so jacked up. It's not just the tangible Basinonians. This is the power of DeAndre Hopkins. Not only does he bring that incredible playmaking ability to the field, but he impacts a game schematically because he demands so much attention. So he impacts the tangible and the intangible as a true wide receiver one, or Basinonians, as the Knights Templar would say, he manipulates the temporal realm and the spiritual realm. This is a guy that impacts you on a tangible basis and intangible basis as well. And that's what makes him so powerful.
Which brings up the simple question, if we focus more on from the Detroit side of things, then, even though I'm the same as you, Wolf, I'm looking at everything Vance Joseph said from a Cardinals offensive standpoint, is Golladay a good enough receiver to rank up your entire defensive game plan around, in which you say, Patrick, go get him?
Mm-hmm. Well, we'll see. You know, whatever is best for our football team, we'll do. This guy hadn't played in 2 weeks, so we'll see how much he plays. And with a receiver coming off of a hamstring pull, it's tough to play every down. So we'll see how they use him early on. And if we have to match Patrick on him, you know, that's obviously something we can do during the game. But we do have a plan for him if he plays, you know, every down or he plays 20 snaps. And again, you know, with him out, that offense should look different. And it's gonna call for us to play balanced football as far as you know, how we close the middle or how much shell we play versus their first second down pass game. Mm.
In other words, I'm not telling you, Jeff.
Yeah, exactly right. No, that's it. We can do anything. We can do it. We might go with a two high shell. We might do that, or we'll close the middle of the field. Listen, this right here. The question is, how much will Kenny Golladay actually play? How much will he play?
That's true.
Would you say the Detroit Lions are desperate, Douglas? Would you say they're desperate right
not
now?
Not only are they desperate, but they're not as desperate as their head coach is.
Oh, my goodness. You're 0-2 right now. You've lost four straight games. Four straight. Going back to last year, where you had double-digit leads in these games.
Mm-hmm.
You've lost 11 games consecutively. Do you think the Detroit Lions are desperate for a win? Say Yales.
Yeah.
Because they are Basinonians. There's no doubt about that. And now all of a sudden, you're going to get Kenny Golladay. If Kenny Golladay says, my hamstring's fine, hey, guess what? You're going to be sucking air, but we're going to throw you out there. We're going to throw you out there, right, Kenny? I think he's going to, if his hamstring is fine, if it's 100%, and I believe that it probably is at this point in time, at least that's what I'm being told, you're going to throw him out there, and he's going to be out there for well over 50% of the snaps.
If you don't spend your life reading all Detroit Lions magazines, perfectly fine through all a camp, not one of those typical early camp soft tissue injuries. The week one practice in preparation for the Lions before they blew that fourth quarter lead against Mitchell Trubisky, that's when he gets the hamstring problems. Hasn't played in week one, hasn't played in week two. So I bet you, Wolf, it's one of those things that he totally feels 100% by now, and yet it could go in the first quarter, you know?
No doubt. No
doubt. We want to give you a brand-new $700 barbecue grill and a custom Arizona Sports cornhole set. Text GATE to 620-620 right now to be part of the Arizona Sports virtual tailgate with your favorite hosts and special NFL guests. We're giving away one barbecue grill and cornhole set every weekday at 5 o'clock. Text GATE to 620-620 for your chance to win. The Arizona Sports virtual tailgate is presented by Four Peaks.
Oh, no.
Five-star games. Five-star games. Five-star games. Five-star games. The NFL's best games with Doug and Wolf.
All right, Basinonians.
Oh, fresh. But there's more, Wolf.
You're a sponsored guy.
FriesFood.com.
Go Fries.
All right, Basinonians, gather around the transistor and press here. There are 4 5-star games this week.
Oh, my goodness.
The Los Angeles Rams. Yes, the Rams are playing the Buffalo Bills. 2-0 versus 2-0, ladies and gentlemen. Number two, Doug Lace.
Okay.
Number two.
The Dallas Cowboys. I know they're 1-1 right now, but the Dallas Cowboys made an awful lot of noise last week, and everyone thinks they're going to be good this year. We'll see. The Cowboys at the Seahawks. That's number two.
Number three.
Number three, the Green Bay Packers against the New Orleans Saints.
You still say the Saints belong?
Oh, my goodness, absolutely. This is it. This is the thin red line for the New Orleans Saints and Drew Brees. Aaron Rodgers is on fire, and Drew Brees is falling. Number four.
Number four.
Oh, there can only be one, and this is a 5-star game indeed. The Kansas City Chiefs at the Baltimore Ravens. Hold on to your butts.
That one's amazing.
That one's amazing.
And those are your 5-star
There you go.
5-star game with Doug and Wolf.
You have to take the cue. You're supposed to throw it to Bear.
I got to get back in practice on that one there.
Coming up next, let's roll through some more great guests today. Dave Pasch, Marvin Lewis, Steve Keim, Nick Aliotti to talk about Pac-12 football. We got a ton, and the ESPN college football man that is in charge of doing a ton of Pac-12 games. Dave Pasch, next on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.